Actually, I'm just, so I run the chlamydia and gonorrhea branch at, or laboratory at CDC. And Sarah Gurry, who's on the APHL CDC STD steering committee, actually approached me and to talk to me about doing a verification for home collection of vaginal swabs. So I'm not going to go really into detail what we did with LA County per se, because each jurisdiction, each state, each region will have slight nuances to this. So I'm going to talk more in a generic form as to what needs to be done, and then I'm sure you can send me emails later or text me later about this. So first off, why vaginal swabs? Well, the performance of vaginal swabs has been looked at by several studies, and I'm going to talk a little bit, well, I'm just going to mention later about the, you know, laboratory guidelines for chlamydia and gonorrhea in a second. But we reviewed all this data last year when we started looking at redoing the laboratory guidelines. And the performance of vaginal swabs was shown in numerous studies to be equivocal to endocervical swabs and slightly better than urine. That doesn't mean that urine is a substandard specimen, but the performance was slightly better for vaginal swabs. And that's shown by all these papers, and I'm sure I've left a few out. I think I left Charlotte's out because she's not here anyway, so I took her off. She was gonna be on a plane. Ease of collection. You know, a lot of people, actually a lot of women, prefer to do vaginal swabs. So with ease of collection, that means that it can be collected by the clinician or self-collected, which is you know, rolls out for, you know, expanding screening, because you can actually allow the person to do self-collection. There is no performance difference between whether or not a clinician collects it or whether or not the patient does a self-collection. And in some of the studies, it actually showed that the patient did a little bit better on those performance specifications. Acceptability, as I mentioned, that a lot of women prefer to do vaginal swabs. In this one study by Max Chernesky, 90% preferred to do found vaginal swabs to be easier than other specimen types, and 76% prefer to do vaginal swabs or pelvic exam. I'm surprised that that's not higher. And 60% prefer them to be over urine. And the big thing was, this last one, was that 94% said that they would do more screening if they were allowed to do a self-obtained vaginal swab. Some of the work that we've been doing in South Pacific Islands, where there is no real screening, we gave them the choice of either doing a self-collected vaginal swab or urine, and over 90% of people in South Pacific Islands are preferring to do vaginal swabs. And I say people, I mean women, because the men don't have vaginas. So stability is the big thing. You know, as far as how stable is it when you transport it to the laboratory, as I'll show you in a second, that the product insert data usually goes up to about 30 degrees Celsius. So is that specimen stable at the extreme temperatures that one would encounter, or that the specimen would encounter while shipping to the laboratory? Well, we did a verification in our laboratory where we held them at higher temperatures, and they were stable. So, and that's in the GenPro product, or even the Charlotte did it with the dry swab. So it seems to work, and they're more stable than what's in the product insert. And this is what I mentioned earlier, is that last year we held a consultation at CDC conjunction with APHL, where we brought in experts and we reviewed the data to redo the laboratory guidelines for chlamydia and gonorrhea. And this, you can see this, you just go to APHL.org and you can see the meeting summary. But what was said was that the specimen of choice that should be used for screening should be vaginal swabs because of all the parameters that I mentioned earlier. So the bottom line is that they work. So we can now move on. But what's the current labeling for vaginal swabs? And this is the problem, this is the issue. There are three companies right now that have a vaginal swab claim: GenPro, Becton Dickinson, and Abbott Laboratories. But they are only labeled to be used for patient-collected specimens within a healthcare setting. So what that means is that the company cannot market to anyone that they can be used outside of a healthcare setting. How am I doing on time? Should I look? Are you going to text me? No. You've lost me. Okay. So if you wanted to use them outside a healthcare setting, it's really considered an off-label process. So what does that mean? That you have to, well, there are some studies right now that are looking at trying to gain FDA clearance, and I think with Carolyn Deal, who was here earlier. There she is. So through NIH, there are some studies that are working toward trying to get FDA clearance for this specimen type. Outside of a healthcare setting. But in the interim, Until that actually happens, laboratories could perform a verification study, and I'm going to talk in general about how you would do that in order to roll out this into a home collection piece. Laboratory, just a quick overview of laboratory diagnostics in the U.S. There is regulated by two things. FDA regulates the marketing of tests within the U.S. Centers for Medicaid Services regulate how the laboratory performs those tests in the U.S., and they do that through CLIA, or the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments. So a laboratory has to satisfy CLIA regulations in order to perform the test. The company, through FDA, can market a test for certain indications. Regardless of whether or not the test is FDA cleared or not cleared, or the indication is FDA cleared or not cleared, the laboratory has to perform certain studies in order to start doing that testing according to CLIA. If the test is FDA cleared and you don't modify it, it's a little bit less than what you have to do if it's a modified test. And this is, you know, I'm not going to go into detail on this because I don't have time, but I could later if you want me, or if you can find me, or just email me or text me. So what's the protocol that we use? So CLIA does not regulate the physical location as to where the specimen is being collected. So if it's collected in a clinic or the home, CLIA does not regulate that. What CLIA focuses on are the product insert data, how that specimen gets to from the patient to the laboratory. So the shipping piece is what CLIA will look at. And this should actually start at the bottom. Product, as I mentioned, this product insert data, for most of the tests, up to about 30 degrees Celsius for anywhere from 30 to 60 days. So outside of that is outside of the product insert. So that's what CLIA would look at normally. And so obviously, if you collect a specimen outside of a clinic and you drop it in the mail, there's a possibility it's going to be outside that product insert data. And this is a big point. So through the APHL CDC STD Steering Committee, we're developing a number of checklists. We've developed a checklist for rectal and pharyngeal testing, for instance, for off-label verification studies. That checklist was reviewed by CMS, Centers for Medicaid Services, who regulate CLIA, but that checklist is not prescriptive to local CLIA surveyors. So the laboratory still needs to talk to the local CLIA surveyors because there could be nuances between each region. It is not a prescriptive document from above. So in 2005 and then 2006, this is how I spent my summer vacation, by measuring temperatures in packages that were shipped around the country. And these are just a few of them. And what you can see in this one was that some of these the temperature spiked over around 39 degrees Celsius in a very short time during this package. And it took 11 days to in transit to get to back to the laboratory. So this temperature was obviously higher than the product insert. And this one, which came from Rick Steese to me, along with some other materials that I can't talk about, the temperature was over 42 degrees Celsius, so a little bit higher than what we saw earlier, but again, much higher than the product insert, and it was 7 days in transit. This one was from Anchorage to Atlanta, and it can actually show why it's difficult to pack clothes when you go to Anchorage in the summertime, because the temperature got up to 30 degrees and then dropped down to 6 degrees Celsius. And there's a lot of fluctuation there. So you're thinking hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold, and what's happening to the degradation of that specimen during transit? And it only took 8 days to get to Atlanta from Anchorage. And then I was really bored on one Sunday, so I actually measured the temperature in my mailbox. And then the blue line is the ambient temperature, which was at the bottom of the mailbox. I was really scientific about this. And the temperature got up to almost 50 degrees Celsius, and that was the highest that we saw in any of these studies. So I think that 50 degrees Celsius, it's 122 degrees Fahrenheit, so pretty hot. So you could probably cook some muffins in there if you want. So when we started working with the LA County Public Health Lab on what we should do to do an off-label verification study, it was really to verify the transit time, mailing, and really the temperature extremes that one would see. So we prepared spike specimens of of various concentrations of chlamydia and gonorrhea from low to high, and we placed them in GenProbe transport media. GenProbe, the Aptima product, is what the company was, or what the LA County Public Health Lab uses. Others may use other assays. We place these specimens in the mailing kits that LA County Public Health provided us, and we mailed them back to them. Once they got to the laboratory, they were tested to ensure that they were positive and negative, for those that were negative. And then we asked them to hold them for 50 degrees Celsius, 122 degrees Fahrenheit for 14 days, and then retest them. And the acceptance criteria on the initial and the retest was that we suggested that they should approach their CLIA surveyor and say over 90% should be accurate at the low levels, up to 10 organisms, you know, based on the concentration, and over 95% accuracy in those that were over almost 10 to the 7 organisms. And LA County actually met them all. There were some, we had to redo it a few times to ensure that they got the actual numbers. But again, it's dependent on how the CLIA surveyor wants to handle it. So as I've just mentioned, we've done this with LA County Public Health Lab, and it worked very well. We've done it with Charlotte Late Gatos' laboratory at Johns Hopkins. The one that's missing here that I've just got to review the data for is the Philadelphia Public Health Laboratory, so they should be up and running. We're ongoing right now with the Alaska Public Health Laboratory. We've sent them specimens, and we're still going back and forth as to what needs to be done. And the question marks are there any others? If you're interested in this after you hear this symposium and you want to go this, you want to go down this and try this program rollout, you first need to talk to your laboratory, and then your laboratory director can either talk to me or their local CLIA surveyor. We will provide any assistance that you need in either discussions with your CLIA surveyor or your laboratory director, and actually provide you with the specimens if needed. So that's laboratory evolution. So we've gone from the microscope to nucleic acid amplification test. So I didn't get any text messages, which disappoints me, so I guess I'll just start tweeting. Are there any questions? How are we doing on time? Did I go over? No. Well, they have, yeah, you have to talk, yeah, there is some labeling. It has to be in a triple package labeling so it doesn't leak during transit. Charlotte's is a little bit different because she uses dry swabs, so that doesn't require any labeling, but it does require an absorbent pad, and we can talk to you about that. Yes?
We have a kit here.
Oh, okay.
Complete with its
mailing
label, and it does have a biohazard.
Would it work for TRIC? GenProbe, I believe, has a TRIC assay that's an ASR, analyte-specific reagent that's not FDA cleared. I don't know. You know, we would have to go through the exact same procedure that we did with this to see if it would hold up to the extreme temperatures. So it would work if the temperatures are fine.
Okay. Case?
We only did this with vaginal swabs, but as I mentioned, that we've done this in the South Pacific, and the men are obviously urine specimens being transported in the GenPro product, and we held them to higher temperatures too, and it was stable, including cooking them for 2 weeks.
And are these liquid specimens?
They are liquid. They're 3.7 mils.
Okay. So you're not using the high absorbent swab?
Correct. We're just using what is in that specimen collection kit. One more question over here, and then that was your question? Wow, did you guys text each other? No.